So assistance or assisting in these tests, they provide assistance in determining how well an individual can perform tasks related to the job. I think it's pretty simple now because of the relevant examples provided in the previous discussions. An excellent illustration, again, we will look at here is the typing tests given to a prospective employee for a secretarial job, correct? So, if that particular lady or gentleman is going to be a secretary who is going to type in a lot of memos, nowadays, generally we use the keyboard rather than the typing machine. So, if they are going to do that, how proficient are they? What is the word per minute speed that they possess? This can again be captured through the means of the achievement test. So it is concerned with what one has accomplished. So if the cutoff is, let us say, 120 words per minute for somebody who's proficient in typing, and the secretary has only 90 words, the candidate has only 90 words per minute. So the organization might want to consider a few other profiles before finalizing the job. And let's suppose that the next day they encounter a person who's equally fluent, who's equally polite, has the requisite soft skills, and has a score of about 130 words per minute. Now, all things considering, other things being the same, this other person, lady or gentleman, might be a better fit for the job, and this specific information or data is derived through the achievement tests. So, when the applicant claims to know something, an achievement test is taken to measure how well they know it. So this can be a part of any occupation. Now, when trainers such as myself, when we go for, we claim that, okay, we possess a certain level of knowledge and expertise in a particular productivity-related topic, like let's say time management. So there would be people, okay, who would be interested in engaging us for our services. They might come up with questions. They might check if we know how it is linked with productivity. They might want to know what are certain underlying principles. They might want to know what are the tips and the traps in time management. If they have themselves undergone a course, they might check with you for principles of planning and organizing, whether you are aware and whether you add that to the course that you propose. So this is a nice example where somebody who claims to know something about a topic is evaluated and assessed to determine that there is a validity in what they are claiming. So by now, students, I think you have gained a good understanding of the ability tests. So the trait tests are most common type of achievement tests. Here the questions have been prepared and tested for such trades as, let us say, welders, people who put up asbestos sheets, then operators who operate machines like the lathes or the punch press, or electricians and machinists. So these are known as trade tests because these are the trades that those particular operators, they may be blue-collared workers, they may be tenured people, they may be skilled or semi-skilled. So such tests are administered. So probably a person may be, put up on a specific machine, and their ability to do that, process will be determined and checked. So let's say they say, okay, I have been on a lathe machine and I can probably do some sort of a tooling. And this company also needs that. So they may put the person on the machine and they may check how many, probably parts would be tooled in an hour's time. And is that the benchmark or is the person falling well short of the standard? So they can take a call and thus this can be a trade-related test. There are, of course, many unstandardized achievement tests given in the industry also, which come under, the umbrella of ability tests. such as typing or dictation tests, which we had mentioned previously, for an applicant for a stenographic or maybe a secretarial position. The next type of test is the personality test, which is a selection procedure that measures the personality characteristics of applicants that are related to future job performance. These typically measure one or more of the five dimensions of personality. So they determine whether the person is extroverted in nature. Now, what is extroverted? Extroverted is, can they speak out? Can they speak up? Can they be, you know, can they be comfortable within the company of several different people, as against something called as introverted or introversion? Emotional stability. So are they able to control their emotions? Are they in sync with their emotions? Like in the yesteryears, the famous Bollywood actor Amitabh Bachchan was known as an angry young man. Correct? So whenever there was some sort of an injustice, whenever there was some sort of an external trigger, Amitabh Bachchan used to flare up and he used to, you know, get into fights with the unjust elements of the society. But in today's day and age, can you afford to do that in a corporate setting? Definitely not. So do you possess emotional stability? So as aspirants, do they possess emotional stability? Can they control their emotions? Can they manage their emotions? Okay, so this is another key trait, which is a desirable trait. Lack of emotional stability may state that this aspirant or candidate is not eligible for our environment. The other one is, how agreeable are you? How cooperative are you with your colleagues or peers? So if you are possessing a high degree of agreeableness, if you are a team player, then that gives you an additional set of brownie points for the job. Conscientiousness. So are you conscientious? Do you aspire to do the right things? Okay. Are you integral to the job, is what this means. And of course, openness to experience. So do you possess an open attitude? Do you possess a growth mindset? And are you flexible enough to encompass the changes that might happen in the future? So these are key elements of personality which are desirable. So any element which is not in the desired quantity, then the HR professionals or the recruitment professionals may take a call. And this is understood through the personality tests. So the importance of personality to job success is, of course, undeniable, right? Like we've seen, if the job demands a person who's continuously speaking to blue-collared employees, they have to be loud, they have to be demanding. Can an introvert perform? Most surely not, right? So these traits should match that particular job. And if they match firmly, then there will be an element of job success. So often, an individual who possesses the intelligence, the aptitude and experience for certain, you know, job profiles, they have failed because of inability to get along with and motivate other people. So if they are not agreeable, so if they believe in only working in a silo, they believe in number crunching, but they cannot forward or transmit or share their thoughts to others, then they might fail. There are examples where there are some very talented technical people, engineers in the software or IT domain, who've not progressed beyond a certain point. The reason is because if a progress requires you to manage people, these people may not be proficient at it. Their personality may not have the attribute of being a people's person. Thus, personality tests, they are conducted to judge maturity, social or interpersonal skills. They also judge the behavior under stress and strain. Like if you are given something, which demands that you flex beyond your zone of comfort. Okay, so can you develop that positive stress? Can you also, remain cool and calculated when there are, when you are strained in the system? So the various forces that act against you, the psychological forces and the physiological forces that demand things from you, are you game to it? Are you good enough or proficient enough to deal with it? For example, you have to go home and prepare presentations for a certain period of time. Your work-life balance is distorted. These are the frequent stresses that people from the finance, people from IT, ITS face regularly. Are you strained because of your boss being too demanding or your colleagues not enacting well with you? So these things will be tested. These could be tested through the personality tests. So this test is very much essential on the case of selection of sales force, public relations staff, etc., where personality plays an important role. So there are some very important points before we progress to the next topic in this particular chapter, which is the points to remember while you are designing and administering as well as evaluating of tests. So tests are to be used as a screening device. So they are not the sole determinants of the selection process. They are a part of it. Test scores are not precise measures. So sometimes you have to take the test scores, okay, you have to balance it with other aspects as well. Tests can be used as supplements. So as I said, they are not the sole predictors of performance. Tests should be designed, assessed, and interpreted only by trained and competent persons. So this is one of the most important points, which is related to the accuracy of the tests. So tests would prove inaccurate or they would not prove beneficial if they are designed by non-trained professionals, people who do not have exposure to psychology, correct? And they also need to be interpreted by people who have, in fact, experience in doing so or have a certified training in doing so. People who are completely aware of the terminologies, people who are completely aware of the interpretation of the score ranges, people who are completely aware of how they have been answered, the context. So now we progress to the next part of the selection process, which is known as the interviews. And here, for the next few slides, we will discuss one important form of interview, that is the personal interviews. So personal interviews, they represent a bridge or a connection that candidates, okay, they must cross to move from job seeker to new hire. So if they aspire to be a part of the company, they must clear or cross this bridge or a connection. However, many interviewees fail to appreciate personal interviews as a pre-acceptance tool that can help them avoid making a career mistake. So if you are aspiring to join a company that is clearly going to give you a career progression, you have to be prudent. Again, it is also the onus of the interviewers to make the right selection from the pool of candidates who appear for such kind of interviews. Interviews thus help the candidate and the employer make an informed and a mutually beneficial employment choice. So what do we mean by informed? Informed is that, the interviewee as well as interviewers have done a good amount of validation on their part. They are completely satisfied that, on the part of the recruitment professional, that this candidate matches my requirements, and on the part of the aspirant, that yes, this is indeed the organization where I will benefit by working in the future. Correct, and it's of course a mutually beneficial choice for both. The personal interview proves to be almost a universal or a ubiquitous selection tool. Dealing with people has always been an art and not a science, correct? So this has to be made into something which is designed properly, and it is not just a scientific process, but also something which involves art. So it's an art rather than a science, as it involves dealing with people. So unlike a test which is administered in the real time, where person's ability is checked in a scientific or a systematic manner, this tends to bring in more of the art element. Correct? So this is what is important for, you know, people to be inducted in the, you know, in the organization. So HR specialists and the person who will be the candidate's immediate supervisor, they basically conduct these interviews. For managerial and professional jobs, it is common for the candidate to have a third interview with a higher level manager, such as a division head. So let's consider that, you know, Mr. X has appeared for the interview of, let us say, a senior manager. Now, he's already been interviewed by different people, like he's been interviewed by, let us say, the general manager, who is, you know, one of the immediate supervisors. So the general manager is a person who this manager will be reporting. But the divisional head, you know, tends to be the CFO of the organization. So he is a manager in finance, correct? So after the round with the HR professional or the recruitment professional and the general manager, there might be another level with the CFO, who tends to be the divisional head of this specific department or division. Now let's look at a few attributes of the selection interview. The first attribute relates to its reliability. So in the interviewing broad context, reliability is nothing but consensus or agreement between two interviewers on their assessment of the same candidate. So reliability is a measure or a quality check where there is a uniformity in the assessment. So this is called as inter-rater reliability. And unfortunately, so this is an irony in the industry, something unfortunate, that research shows it is rather weak. Now, what does this mean? Let's suppose that there are multiple rounds of interviews. So the raters are nothing but the interviewers. Now let's suppose in the last case, CFO was at one level and we had the general. Now if there is an interrelator non-reliability, then there will be a difficulty in choosing this candidate, or the validity of the choice may not seem proper. So both of these entities, they need to have the test where the test is reliable in nature. Okay, so the assessment that they do is has to be having some sort of a consensus or a common agreement. The next is the quality or characteristic of the validity of the interview. So the predictive validity of the interview is very low. So this is again coming out from certain systematic research that was done in the earlier decades, like research done in the 70s and 80s. And this suggested that the average validity of the interview for predicting job performance was very low. So again, this again is in line with what we have discussed with as in our previous parameter. Now this is now fading away. So recent research has suggested that some individual interviewers may be valid, whereas many others are not. So if you are careful in your approach, if you are well articulated, if you consider various dimensions of an interview, then the validity may go higher. The next aspect is that of a perceptual error. Now, what is an error? Error is basically a mistake, and perceptual means a flaw in the perception. So it is basically the inability to judge humans, things or situations fairly and accurately. Examples could include such things as a bias. A bias is a holistic type of thinking, a preference, a prejudice, which may be, you know, some amount of interest in one specific group or a person vis-a-vis lesser amount of inclination or interest against the other. Stereotyping basically is attributing a quality of the group to an individual who seems to be attached to the group. To give a simple example, let's consider, when we look at the community of Gujaratis or Marwadis, what comes immediately to our mind? That they have an innate or an inherent skill for conducting business, right? So they are natural born business people. So, this can lead to a false sense of thinking or judgment. Maybe the person or maybe his, earlier couple of generations have never been into business. They've always been into some sort of service. Like, let's say Mr. Shah is one of the aspirants. His father has served Bajaj Auto for the last 40 years. His grandfather was in Philips for the last 30 years before that. So they have never ventured into any sort of a business. But then when an interviewer, when the name Mr. Shah comes, okay, they will interpret it along the lines of a stereotype. So these flaws in human thinking have always caused us to make mistakes in different aspects of our lives. So it seems that interviewers often commit judgmental and perceptual errors that can compromise the validity of their assessments. Now, what scientists have been able to do, especially the behavioral scientists and the psychologists, they have been able to come up with some good and relevant names. Like the first type of error which can happen in interviewing is known as the halo effect. Now, what is a halo effect or a halo error? Now, if you have seen the paintings or, the frescoes of gods, like let's say a Gautam Buddha, okay, or Lord Mahavir or Lord Shankar or Bhagwan Vishnu, Bhagwan Krishna, Jesus Christ, okay, Guru Nanak Dev Ji. So you will see, or even the Mughal emperors, so you will see that there is a halo behind them, a light coming. So there is a sort of a sun or a moon behind their image and it is spreading light. So that's a sort of a halo. Now, how does this halo play a part in it becoming a perceptual or a judgmental error? So halo error or effect occurs when either the interviewer's overall impressions or strong impression of a single dimension spreads to influence his or her rating of the other characteristics of that particular aspirant. For example, let us say that they are hiring a stenographer or a secretary. Now, this is a lady in her early 30s. She is very well dressed and speaks fluent English. Now, there are other things that need to also be determined whether a job is offered to this individual. Like, can she also, take proper notes? Can she also type quickly? Can she also take proper appointments for her boss? If these things are missing and she's only taken on the virtue of her polished looks and her fluency in the language, then this would amount to what is known as a halo effect. So there is another error or effect undermining or creating issues with the judgments of interviewers or recruiters. It's known as the similarity error or effect. So interviewers are positively predisposed to candidates who are similar to them. These similarities can be ranged in things like the hobbies. For example, if the recruitment professional is an avid chess player, and the aspirant is also good with their chess, they have cited it explicitly. Along with this, both spend time playing badminton on weekends. So this might lead to something which may be known as a similarity error. Again, interest. So if both are interested in reading science fiction novels, so this may again relate to a similarity bias or an error. And a personal background, let's say both are alumni from the reputed Wernicke's institution, Matunga. So this can also lead to that sort of an error. So they are negatively disposed to candidates who are unlike them. So there is a sort of a tendency, correct, to have a slight negative disposition or inclination to those candidates. For example, let's say a person with a heavy similarity error has three candidates to interview on that day. The first person, they look at the resume, they screen it quickly and come to know that the person belongs to their own city. So let's say the interviewer is originally from Delhi, working in Pune. And on the resume, the person says he's originally from Delhi, the aspirant. The second thing is, let's say they are very good at playing table tennis, which is again something that the interviewer does. And let's say they love dabbling into psychological topics, which again is a forte or a niche of the interviewer. Now, after having conducted this interview, the next candidate turns out to be a person who's from a very different area. Let's say he's from Assam. His likes are entirely different, correct? His accent is different. His personal background is very different. Now, what happens is the similarity error might come into play where they might not want to explore more of the second candidate because the first seems to be such a close match. So I hope the similarity error has been understood. Another thing which I came across recently is, let's suppose the interviewer, meets a person who's heavily tattooed. So they have tattoos on their hand, they have a tattoo on their neck, and the interviewer doesn't. Now, these sort of tattoos may lead to a predisposition that maybe this candidate is overwhelming and may not fit the culture. But just imagine if the recruiter himself has tattoos. So a lady or a gentleman who's got tattoo on their hand, they've got a tattoo on their neck, they've got a tattoo probably on their bicep, and the same is being seen in the candidate. Now things would get interesting, right? So this is a point to ponder. It seems that the interviewers often commit judgmental errors. So this is what we've been looking at. We've covered two errors already, being the halo effect or error and the similarity effect. Now comes the contrast. So we've actually covered it. Let's nevertheless, read it again or discuss it again. So when several candidates are interviewed in succession, the raters tend to compare each other. For example, the candidate who was hailing from Delhi vis-a-vis the candidate who hailed from Assam. So there is a sort of a contrast. Now, if the Delhi candidate is also a fluent speaker of English and is a jolly person, so you might want to contrast that and see, oh, the Assamese person is pretty serious. He comes with a Northeast Indian accent. Okay, this is just, of course, an example. So the raters or the interviewers will have a general tendency for a comparison among such candidates with the preceding candidates instead of an absolute standard. So they will not have a validity standard. They will compare the candidates with the following or the preceding ones. The next sort of an error that we need to again take into consideration or cognizance is the first impression error. Now, this sort of error has been beautifully illustrated by the famous author Malcolm Gladwell in his book Blink, where he has called it as thin slicing, where we involve or over-involve our intuition or instincts rather than objective or critical thinking. So some interviewers, they tend to form a first impression of the candidates rather quickly. So they jump to a conclusion, or they, you know, they quickly judge rather than being more objective. Now this may happen at several junctures. This may happen on a review of the application blank, or on the first few moments of either a virtual interview or an actual in-person interview. Thus, this impression is based on relatively little information about the candidate. For example, the tattoo which I spoke about. Yeah. So if the person has several tattoos, and the interviewer may develop a quick impression about the same. A person who's probably wearing spectacles, is clean shaven, has a short haircut, is holding a file and a diary, is very articulate. Again, this might create the first impression error. So there are several aspects which an interviewer needs to consider. Now, to overcome this error, the person who is interviewing, the rater or the interviewer, must suspend their judgment. So many of these errors, like the first impression, the similarity, the halo, the contrast, a key technique of overcoming these is to suspend your judgment, to make more analysis, to make more checks, and you have to practice what is known as critical thinking, or slowed form of thinking, rather than being more instinctive or innovative. Now over here we look at the patterns of interviews. So through this picture, we are looking at several patterns, and we will discuss them in detail in the upcoming slides. So one important category or pattern may be a single one-on-one, where, as you can see in the picture itself, there is a recruitment professional and there is a person who has been interviewed. The next is a multiple one-on-one, where there would be, you know, these particular people, like there would be multiple rounds. So different rounds where they would encounter, like the example given previously, and a panel or a board where, if you can see, there are several raters, correct? There are several individuals who will jointly conduct an interview. So this is a many to one sort of a format, where these folks will interview that specific candidate. Now, of course, as explained in the earlier slide, let us look at each of these patterns in more detail. The one-on-one job interviewing process is common in many companies and organizations. I'm sure most of the people who have worked for earlier organizations do possess some form of experience, would have gone through these sort of interviews. Group interviews have some advantages, but the higher probability of interruptions and distractions can make that interviewing technique less productive, hence the need for what we call as the one-on-one job interview. So in this, when you interview one-on-one with a potential employer, you make sure your discussions are job-centered and professional, but don't hesitate to flash a friendly smile or respond with an energetic answer. So this, of course, at times is from the perspective of the candidate, but can also hold true for the person who's conducting the interview. In an earlier discussion, if you recollect, we had mentioned the need for a recruitment professional to be open, to be affable to the candidates, to make them feel comfortable, so that the candidate recognizes that, yes, the face of the organization, the recruitment professional, is somebody who's warm and approachable, and this may reflect the organization in a better light than usual. During traditional one-on-one interviews, the interviewer has a specific set of questions that they will want answers for. Now, this may result in a round of question answers, or what we know as probing, correct? Now, generally, they ask the same questions of all applicants so that they can evaluate all the interviewees based on the questions that they answer. You know, the answers that they provide for the questions. For example, if one candidate is asked something and the other candidate is completely asked a different question, it may not, you know, be reliable or valid form of interviewing. So it is important to ask, so answer all questions as fully as possible. So it's an art. So the reason it's an art is how well can you probe the candidate to get complete information from them so that we can then analyze their answers and select for the next round. So your chance to supply additional information that is important will come at the end. So you might want to probe as a professional, you might want to encourage the candidates so you get the proper information from them. So if your questions about the company have not been answered properly, you can ask relevant questions at the end of the interview. Now here in some places in this particular chapter or this particular book, we've also given you a balanced perspective. Like in this particular place, the perspective is that of an aspiring candidate. So we can understand the psyche that they possess and what sort of approach they would take. So when finished with the interview, ask when the selection process is expected to be completed and the hiring decision will be made. So as recruitment professionals, I'm sure the tenured ones may have encountered such diligent and smart aspirants. The folks who aspire to be a part of this process or aspire to be HR professionals manning recruitment positions need to also be considerate of such a diligent thought process on behalf of the candidates. A panel or committee interview technique is often used by companies that require a high degree of teamwork. Thank you.